coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. The big push is on. I am Andrew Farmer. As always, with me, the Jedi Cole Houston. Hey, Cole.
Good evening, everyone.
Cole might be dying. So welcome to the Death Rattle podcast.
If you hear anything, just kind of, if you're a bustle in your hedgerow or in my lungs, you'll know.
Wow. It's just a real weird Led Zeppelin cut. There. I was going to say it's just a lot of boys making noise, which is another deep, like, white boy rock cut. That's welcome to old white guys talk about music that they like. No. Oh, Cole, what happens in the next 5 hours, ladies and gentlemen? Cole has brought upon himself. I hope that at the end of this 5 hours, he understands the pain of a previous podcast that he subjected people to, which was 12 hours of Watchmen, an in-depth look at every Watchmen book.
Practically panel by panel, if you missed out on that. It's fortunately long gone.
So essentially what we're going to be doing is, Cole, why don't you tell everybody what this is?
This is, of course, our latest story arc, hence the 5 hours. We're not going to have a 5-hour show.
We might.
That's true.
Give me the option.
Yes.
Don't test
but,
me.
But this is a part one of It's Not Easy Being Green. And within the parameters of this episode, of this arc, rather, we're going to explore the Green Lantern in every possible angle and incarnation and pretty much anything else that can be Green Lanterned.
And I really want to come up front and thank, there's a particular website which exhaustively, now, you know, we call from a lot of sources when we do our research for our shows, even though it might not show sometimes, but there is a website called Blog of Oa that did an expansive history of the Green Lantern over the last 75 years, and I just want to give a huge shout out at the beginning of this thing to them for providing us with just fodder for days and so much interesting information. But yeah, this is issue one, and issue one, we're going to work ourselves through the history, basically. There's a lot there, a lot of really cool stuff that I was unaware of being a 30-year Green Lantern fan that is really interesting.
What's fascinating about that is I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to follow your lead, Mama Jamma. And it turns out that, you know, in the process,
holy cow, yeah,
of not simply relying on what's in your brain, you have discovered so much more. You went looking for Green Lantern and found yourself.
I found myself, really. It's a tale of change of history and of hope, and oddly enough, of willpower, which I think is really interesting. Just the way that this character has developed over time has been almost like a she will getting him to the page consistently again. And so,
Cole, wow, very John Hammondy.
Are you
creation is an act of sheer will.
Pretty, but life found a way. I'm just going to say it. So, Cole, are you ready to get in the... Mr. Peabody, are you ready to get in the Wayback Machine and go with me to the late 30s?
Absolutely, Shaman.
All right. And here we go. And we're...
Flash, Mr. Peabody.
Yeah, so 1930s. We had come out of the Depression. We had come out of the Great War. We were heading precipitistically... that were close, another great war. And a lot of people at this point, this is when comics became comics. So yeah. Men were men and comics were comics, damn it.
That's when a comic was a comic.
and groovy. We're cutting deep on these white boy rock jokes tonight.
That's
so
right.
So comic books were cut to a guy named Martin Nodell. Martin Nodell is the unsung hero of the Green Lantern mythos. Martin Nodell was a man who loved the theater in a time when theater was dying and the talkies were getting to the point where, you know, you couldn't, theater wasn't theater anymore. Martin Nodell was a nerd of the highest caliber, and Martin Nodell loved...
I can imagine Nodell, whatever shall I do with these theater glasses?
Pretty much, it's like... I'm trained in Shakespearean theater, and they've closed 45 theaters in the last week.
That's right.
But I love mythology.
And 17 of them have become picture shows.
Yeah, and that ain't my bag, baby. And
I tried to use my theater glasses at the picture show and nearly went blind.
But he had a background in theater, but he was never... he loved mythology, but especially and Chinese. And he's looking for work. And he says... I'm gonna grab one of these here Superman comics, and he's reading it, and he flips it over. Two addresses on the back. One was for All American Comics, one was for DC Comics. And he closed his eyes and he pointed and went to that address, and it was All American Comics. And he walks in the door and he says, "I want to work for you guys." And they said, "All right, kid, what do you got?" And he said, "Nothing." And they said, "Yeah, no. Bring me back some ideas." And we'll talk. So Nadell leaves, gets on the train, and starts heading home. And he's like, okay, I got to come up with something here. And he's riding the train back, and he's kicking it around. And he's starting to put together some ideas from, you know, from mythology and from his theater.
I have to
background.
Point out, this is a rarefied period in American history where you can walk into...
yes!
And Seinfeld the hell out of it.
You pretty much just walk in with nothing and say, "I want to write you funny books."
That's right.
And they're like, "No, kid, get out of here." Because he was a 20. Yeah.
Come back when you got something I can publish.
Well, imagine a 20-year-old kid walking
that's
into...
That's comics, by the way, aren't they?
What is it?
Come back when you got something I can publish, kid. That's old comics.
Old comics. Yeah, thank you. That's awesome. But he's a 20-year-old kid. That walks into this place. Imagine an old kid walking into Marvel Studios at this point and saying, "I'm gonna work for you guys." And they're like, "God,
I'm afraid old comics died a long time ago."
Right. So he gets on this train. And he starts heading home because you know they all. We already talked about this, and we talked about when we talked about New York. They all lived in Brooklyn, baby.
That's right.
And he gets on the train. He starts. He's kicking around these ideas. He looks out the window, and trains. Different back then. Trains were not what they are now. Trains were conducted manual. And there's a guy out there who is conducting train tracks, and he's got a lantern, and that lantern has a gel on telling the train when to stop and when to go. And that's it. Boom. Has the idea. He's like,
so it's not like that story about the bridge that was out, and it turned out it was just a moth in front of the lantern that would.
No,
I think
story,
every man, woman, and child in America has had to read that story.
They have. So he comes up with this idea and then he goes and gets a phone, and he just starts looking for the name of this guy, and he lands on Alan Scott, and he says, "Alan Scott, that's a pretty innocuous name. I can use that." And I think in one – so here, Cole, here's something. I'm so excited, by the way. This is the most exciting thing. I'm so pumped. This is one of my favorite things I've ever done in this almost 300 issues. Okay, Cole, did you realize we're on 300 issues into this?
It's amazing. And on top of that, I think what's really amazing is when I was developing this arc, when I was considering where do we go with this arc, we could have gone all in with the Silver Age Green Lantern. Silver Age to Modern Age.
And we will.
And the bulk of it is. But I thought, no, we need to pave, we need to blaze the trail, or follow the trail that was blazed that got us to the Silver Age. And already, this has just been an insanely good choice.
Well, and here's where it gets, so this is the thing of all of this, the revelation that it was a train, you know, it was a train brakesman that gave him the incepted, to use the word inception wrong, that incepted the idea of the lantern. The fact that he was so into Greek and Chinese mythology, that's why he had the lace-up slippers and the silks and the colors and the cape and the domino mask was his theater and the cape and the domino mask came from his theater background. The colors and the silks came from his love of Chinese mythology, and like the slippers
and the symbol on the tunic came from his time putting decals on t-shirts at the mall.
in the
late 70s.
It was an airbrushed Mickey Mouse. That was the first. Should have gone with it. But here's the one that killed. The guy loved Wagner. The idea, the pièce de résistance for this idea for him came the cycle of rings.
The ring of
the ring of so the ring cycle is what gave him the idea. So he has this idea, meteorite falls to Earth, and the meteorite tells him the ring, which is pretty much straight out of Wagner's ring cycle.
Except that in the sort of amorphous time period in which the ring cycle takes place, in its own sort of little Middle-earthian realm, being told, go forge your ring, is like, oh, sure, you know, because chances are everyone knew how to do that from childhood.
Right.
1930s America, you know, go forge your ring. Yeah, you go...
Sit on it.
Go build a
combustion
engine. Stupid ear. You don't tell me what to do, rock. Which, by the way, you rock!
You dumb rock, but you rock. Yeah. So, you know, in his story, he takes the meter and makes the lantern because he worked on a train yard. And that's what Alan Scott started doing, was a trainsman. And then the lantern instructs him to make the ring. So a lot of the mythology of the Green Lantern comes well after. So he puts all this stuff together, jumps back on a train, poof, heads out for All-American Comics. In the meantime, he's come up with the ring's 24-hour recharge cycle, which basically is still around today.
Yeah.
You know, all of the design, the backstory, and the outline for everything he's got together. And he heads in.
Well, the thing about it is, I want to point out that the ring, you know, that sort of built-in limitation showed that he understood that you can't have your hero be all-powerful or you have no story.
Right. He was not a dumb man. So he goes back into All-American Comics and he sits down and says, here it is. You told me to come back with an idea. Here's an idea. And it just so happened that he caught the eye of one show favorite, Bill Finger.
Oh, bang, bang.
Bang, bang, Bill Finger's back, baby.
Bang, bang, it's Bill Finger. Bang, bang.
Shot him down. Bang, bang. They partnered him with the initial Green Lantern, and Nadell did all of the art, the pencils and the inks. All-American Comics number 16 was Green Lantern in 19, and it went buck wild. People loved it. It was the biggest hit of the early 40s for All-American. And then All-American did something that had never been done before. All-American made the JSA with all of their various component parts. Made the JSA. And another piece that I didn't know.
That's it. I'm actually completely blown away, because as you were telling the story, I thought that his Bill Finger would have landed on DC Comics.
Yeah, this is
when trying to make this choice. You know, I always look at the JSA as sort of being the retrofit Justice League.
Yeah.
Without ever realizing that, wow, you know, they've been around longer. And not only do they predate the Justice League, they weren't originally at DC.
Right. Right. So the Crisis of Two Earths, the classic image of the Justice League sitting around the fortune teller's table with the crystal ball inside and then the cloud coming up in the JSA in that cloud. They had been recently acquired to DC at that point. So these guys predated that. And that was the Flash, the J. Garrick Flash, the Spectre, that was Dr. Fate, that was the original Dr. Fate, the original Hawkman, the original Hourman, the original Sandman, the Atom, and Johnny Thunder. When we talk about Alan Scott, I do want to talk about later the kind of resurgence of Alan Scott after after all this, after Hal Jordan, after they brought him back, actually Jeff Johns brought him back in, you know, later in the run of JSA that he did. He's been a seminal character from Jump Street. It's awesome. But did you know that he had a sidekick?
Oh, I think you may be speaking of one Doibie Dickles.
Doibie Dickles. Who's
missed the lantern. Nice, Doibie Dickles.
Yes, Doibie Dickles. And they fought the Nazis and Japanese during World War II. They just punched him a bunch in the face. You know how we love us some Nazi punchers on this show. So it's almost a Superman story at this point. Speaking of, and this is going to date it, and I know that we probably should stick to Green Lantern, but if you guys haven't watched The Turn Bright, this is supposed to be Evergreen, through and Evergreen, watch the trailer in Bright. It's insane. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Which I do. I need to do. I'm gonna go ahead and cue that up for later.
As the mythology grew, like in all comics, so did Green Lantern. So it wasn't until, like, 6 that he became, that the Wood thing came into, where in the early days, he wouldn't really form anything with his lantern, with his ring. It would just kind of be like a ghostly, magical force that would come out and, like, punch people, or lift things, or whatever. So in 46, as the evolution of the character, then you started seeing objects. Then you started seeing kind of a refining of the Green Lantern that we know now, which is the creation of objects, and which is the vulnerability to wood. Because the 24-hour thing is great, but that gives him 24 hours, you know, of unlimited power. And the only way, you know, oh, we stole your lantern, you know, Alan, what are you going to do? Well, I got 22 more hours of unlimited power, so I'm going to be good. But then they introduced the wood vulnerability. So they gave him an actual vulnerability at that point.
Yeah, because otherwise it's sort of like, yeah, I got 22 hours of ass kicking left as long as you don't come after me with a 2x4.
Now, here it gets pretty interesting, okay? Finger leaves. After the third issue of Green Lantern's own book, Finger Leaves. And they gave it to Alfred Bester. Do you know who Alfred Bester is?
That name rings terribly familiar, but I can't say I place it per se.
So Alfred Bester was, we like to think of things like Brad Meltzer and Jay Straczynski and these guys who are in a weird twist these days, SNL writers and comedians are getting their shot at writing comic books.
Yes.
We like to think of that as a more modern contrivance, when in actuality, back in 42, Alfred Bester was a best-selling short story author, sci-fi short story author.
Okay, that may be where I know the name then.
So not only that, Bester goes to work for DC, works under Julius, or, you know, Mr. Schwartz or Julie if you're nasty. But he's the one, Bester's Grundy.
Okay.
And in Brightest Day and Blackest Night, we owe that to Alfred Bester.
Wow.
Yes, we owe that to Alfred Bester. No one's Bester than Alfred. But Alfred was
the Bester to you each morning.
But he wrote things like The Demolished Man and and the Star's My Destination. And then he worked for DC for a while, and he worked on things like Superman. He created he created Grundy, and he created The Oath. But he was also the writer, The Phantom, and Mandrake the Magician.
Wow.
So this guy...
Okay, that's where I know the name is from, The Phantom.
The Phantom, yeah.
Who smells the Phantom, smells the Phantom's armpit, she'll surely die.
Is that the Billy Zane version?
That is actually from the Paul Hogan Show.
What?
Oh, yeah.
I know
you go back
talked
far
about that.
Pre-Crocodile Dundee.
I know we've had conversations about the Paul Hogan Show because Stu has been on this show before, so...
I bloody hide him!
But yes, Bester was in the creation of the Green Lantern. You know, now the Evil. He was amazing. But with that, we kind of a time period in comics. What else is happening in 1942?
Yeah, you know, let's just say a lot of comics got shipped over there.
They did.
Over there.
Oh, sorry, I'm waiting for the ghost of Nadell to show up and be like, oh, you're in the show, pal. So I didn't know this. Well, this is something I don't know ever talked about. Because of World and because of rationing, comics had to reduce their page count. And that paper was being used for war effort.
Okay.
I don't think we ever talked about that.
No, we really hadn't.
So we started a genre fall out of favor. With the end of the and the coming up super, and we've talked about this many, many times, superhero comics wane, and we started seeing more comics and slice of life comics, things like that on the, and that's because they, you have these guys, sir, you know, punching Hitler and all that.
When
you
come, that's right.
When you come back, you don't necessarily want that or need that.
There's
reminder.
No one to punch.
Yeah, well, there's no punch. And there's also the post-film industry had exploded. So a lot of what people were going to the radio and comic books for, were they were turning to the theater. So we saw a sea change in the... And...
So yet again, the damn picture shows were...
So it's not that comics...
We're going to destroy everything you love, old Hollywood.
It's not that... Right. It's not that comics went away, it's that they changed direction. So you started seeing Slice of Life, you started seeing Kopp comics, and then you started seeing media crossover from like Disney and Looney Tunes and Francis the Talking Mule, and you know, all of these things started being pulled to the fore. Couple that with Cole, we're doing it again. 1948, baby.
Ah.
What happened in 1948? Longtime friend of the show and analyst, Frederick Wortham.
Oh, yes.
Steps on the scene. Frederick.
Making a name for himself.
Jesus Christ. So we're back to the psychopathy of comic and the seduction of the innocent. Dumb. So
the thing about it is Wortham comes along with his comic book crusade. It just... The period we're in this country, we are at one of those places we find ourselves from time to time in the sort of the doctrine of because I said so. And a lot of bad things happen because someone said so.
Yes.
And we have not learned to guard against that. And it continues to happen to this day.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But it's by far. So at that point, we end the 1950s of Alan Scott. That kind of puts a pin in Alan Scott.
Yeah.
While Superman, Batman, and the Trinity of DC continued, almost every other instance of a hero in DC and in Marvel, as we've discussed, went to the wayside. No more.
Yeah.
And it would be a while before we get another instance of Green Lantern in comic. But And we'll pick up there with the actual history of Green Lantern. But that being said, we said earlier, by far does not end the story of Alan Scott.
No, not at all.
Alan Scott continues well after this. Really interesting stuff happens much later. So Alan Scott, after Crisis on him.
But at what point does that catalog, how does the JSA make it to, you know, effectively jump ship?
You mean leave? This is when the JSA ascends the world.
I guess, did DC ultimately just come along and buy the properties of a defunct competitor?
Yes. Essentially, yes. They scooped them up along with Fawcett at the same time as they went Fawcett.
Okay, good. I just wanted to kind of clarify how all these characters managed to get into the DC family and make at least me think that they'd always been there.
So they Berenstain Bears, they Bader Meinhoff'd you to think.
Yeah, pretty much.
So in the continuity of comic, okay, so that was the actual history of publication. In the continuity of of the actual comic themselves, they had to explain why they all disappeared.
Yes.
Right. So what they did was they said that there was a villain named Ian Karkle. Ian stopped their aging. So all of the members of the JSA stopped aging. at that point. So your Jay Garricks, your Alan Scotts, your Wildcats, or, you know, at that point they stopped aging. And then they got basically and I think we've talked about this, that we talked about how the JSA comics, the why can't I think, I'm struggling with the name of that.
Unreasonable Acts department.
Yeah, yeah, you're there too. With where they were basically, you know, outing people as communists.
Yeah, un-American.
House Subcommittee on Un-American Activities.
There we are.
So the Congressional Un-American Activity Committee, which they based on the House Un-American Activities Committee, made them reveal their identity. If you declined, you were forced into retirement. You could never be seen again. If you were, you know, it's basically civil. It's basically Watchmen.
Yeah, essentially they got the idea. The Civil War concept existed long before Civil War.
Right. And in the 60s, so they're all forced into retirement in the 50s. The JSA reforms in the 60s, and they don't say much about it. But keep in mind, we find out that this is Earth 2. I think it's Earth 2. I think this
it is.
Yes.
In this strange sort of way, the predecessor Earth gets remanded to being number 2.
Right. We were here first, which I guess they weren't necessarily here first.
Yeah.
So the last days of the Justice Society follow, which is the post-crisis, which explains what all happened. And then they go through this whole thing of retconning. So at this point, I think it's a pretty good place to start talking about the difference between magic heroes and science heroes, because
yes.
Alan Moore did it beautifully in Top 10.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where he discusses the difference. Basically pre-World War II, there was a glut of magic heroes. They were all magic-based. Magic was really interesting. During this time period, you had all of the supernatural stuff was the TMZ of the day. So you would have psychics and magicians and illusionists, and they were the biggest celebrities on the planet. That was the most interesting stuff you could get your hands on. Well, after World War II, I guess leading up to and after World War II, wouldn't you say?
I think so. I think once you've ushered in the atomic age.
Yes, yes, that's good.
Yeah. Then you've ushered in a whole new age of sort of pop culture pseudoscience.
That's a good way to put it. Everybody was an armchair scientist at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Your kids play with this radium playset.
Yes, make a transistor radio out of
here's
this palladium.
Here's a pool of mercury for you kids to play with.
Right, here's a pool of mercury and some uranium. Just knock yourselves out, kids, and some running electricity. Get cracking. No, but they retconned him like in the late post crisis to make him fit with their crisis continuity and make him more in line with the galaxy and the Hal Jordan Lantern and, you know, the space cop idea. And I preferred that not happen.
Yeah.
You know, but it happened. So it is what it is. But he does come back in what I think is the of his continuity post his origin, right? His origin was mind-blowing because I didn't know a whole lot about it. So it's not like Hal Jordan, where everybody knows in their, you know, everybody's seen the image of Hal Jordan leaned over the purple, you know, the purple dead guy taking
yes.
the ring from. With Alan Scott, I didn't know. So at some point, the Starheart, which is what the meteorite is referred to in a very John Carpenter Starman sort of way, a movie that doesn't get enough credit, by the way, becomes a part of him, and he becomes rebranded as the Sentinel and reformed the Justice Society. And this is later, this is under the watchful eye of Jeff Johns, and it runs for about 8 or 9 volumes. It's a lot. It includes such luminaries as recent Andrew favorite Jack Knight Starman,
yes,
Wildcat, Jay Garrick, they're basically teaching the next generation of it's a legacy. And it's actually really good. If you haven't read any of them, I would suggest it. And I will tell you the copies that I bought came from Ollie's. So you can find them pretty damn cheap.
Yeah, if you're fortunate enough to have an Ollie's, good. Check out their trade paperback selection. It's insane in both scale and diversity and the fact that you just never know what's going to be there.
And what's really interesting, I just wanted to put this out there into the world today. So they're casting the Star, and the Star is based on Star that was introduced in a book, but really came into fruition in the JSA. And it's going to be for this. But they announced today that they had cast Starman as Joel McHale.
Oh, nice.
As Joel McHale from Community, Joel, and you know, the soup and all that. And I got super excited because I'm like, Joel McHale is one of my favorite actors. And Starman, until I open it and I realize it's Pemberton, the original JSA Starman, and not Jack Knight. And I was like, you sons of bitches. I was so close. I was so close. You know,
it could have been something.
It could have been something. But Sentinel also had a daughter named Jade. Jade had similar powers. Sentinel kind of takes Kyle Rayner under his wing and helps him to become the Green Lantern. In Zero Hour, kind of helps him out with that, and helps fight Parallax during that whole thing, which we will absolutely get into.
You'll be hearing a lot about Parallax.
Yeah. God, I don't. I can't even get into the rings. I might. I'm gonna be. I'm going to be Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now by that point. I'm just going to be sitting behind a muslin curtain and Cole's roll up in a boat. And they'll direct him to me and they're going to be like, they say I'm mad. And Cole's going to be like, I see no method in what you're doing anymore. But Alan Scott also played in Greg Rucka's kind of really great Checkmate series. He was the White King for a really long time. So he was in the Checkmate series as well. So this guy has had, keep in mind, Alan Scott, and we're not going to get into everything that...
absolutely every single incarnation.
But Alan Scott has had a career since the 19... We're talking Batman level for this guy that is still going strong today, even up to now with the Doomsday Clock post-DC. He's still around. So he hasn't gone in there, so... Cole, I'm sorry, I ran roughshod over the entire hour.
Well,
so.
You might. You have both the passion and the willpower.
I do. I have all the rings. So, what do you have any like Alan Scott or early Green Lantern? You know, the next issue where we start getting into Silver Age and Hal Jordan, but this is some of the most interesting stuff I think I've ever reached up.
Oh yeah, and I think let me give you one that. Blew me away.
Yes.
I kind of got Martha'd on this.
All right.
That, you know, decades before we knew what that was. Like, I just got Martha'd, whatever that's going to be.
You're like, I'm going to know what that is in 20 years.
Yeah, we'll coin that phrase later on. No, what I'm getting at is an incarnation of the character that is kind of Mandarined, too. I never saw it coming.
Right.
And, essentially, that is Alan Scott as the initial Green Lantern in Kingdom Come.
You're right.
Because you initially see and you think, man, Hal has let himself go.
No, you are absolutely correct. Because you get Hal later with Hal's, like, crazy, like, Sentinel, like whatever he has in the sky, his great emerald watchtower in the sky, but your initial introduction is definitely Alan Scott. That's a good catch, man.
Yeah, and really, I did not make that connection, and it was so subtly done.
They also later made him a part of the, which I do not agree with, as I'm sure we're all familiar. Green is, you know, the Swamp Thing, and you know, Poison Ivy, they'll plant life on Earth, and they made his power associated with green, and I'm just kind of like, guys, just leave well enough alone, you know? Like,
I don't know, I can kind of see an underlying piece of logic.
Oh, yes, hit me with it, because I think I know where you're going.
In the the vulnerability to wound.
It's so good, right? I literally just
Did you just get Martha'd?
I just got Martha'd.
Holy crap.
Damn it. It's so good.
Whether by accident or design, that seems to be the way, the only way that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's so...
With that connection, you have a sort of, I don't know, it's almost like a Mobius strip of both the power and the vulnerability being connected to one.
Right. It's very cool. That, like, okay, I'm behind it now. Damn it. I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be, but I am. So they won. You won this time. whoever decided that was the thing that we were this time. So as we wrap up this first issue, do you have any final thoughts, anything about what we talked about? Like, because I know we came at it real hard, real fast.
Absolutely. One of the things I think that is typified by our original Green Lantern is how brilliantly, beautifully, and incredibly DC has reinvented its Golden Age catalog, which I didn't know wasn't theirs. But, you know, this is the JSA is the collection of the most irrelevant heroes until relevance is breathed into them. And you're like, holy crap, they belong even today.
You could not be more, because
plus they Ragnarok'd it back in the.
All right, what define Ragnarok'd it for?
There was a JSA comic where I believe Green Lantern was among those who actually stood at the mythical Ragnarok.
Really?
Oh, what the hell was it? It was a JSA miniseries and it sucked, but
that shit sucked.
At least according to the movie Free Enterprise.
Did it?
Wolverine is where it's at.
God, I need to watch that movie again.
Quoting a movie you haven't seen in a while, and I see it in my mind on a daily basis.
I need to see that. I need to watch that movie again so bad. It was such a good movie.
But yeah, what was that? What the hell was that? It was like the JSA go to Ragnarok or something. And that the part of it was that explained why where they went for so long.
Was it the untold story of the JSA? Was it that thing where they kind of did the whole reinvention deal? I don't think it was.
No, I think it was like, what was it, Last Days of the Justice Society, I think.
Yeah, that's the one I thought it was, yeah. Yeah, I think that's it.
I believe it was that, or it was just a Justice Society of America comic, like a miniseries.
Right.
That kind of explained what they were up to when they went all Ragnarok-y.
That's cool. I really like the character of Alan Scott, because he's taken on a more mentorship role now. You know, they realized, and it took like a, like, for given value of whether you like Geoff Johns or, right, like, whether you like his storytelling and his mythology building, he took the idea of the Golden Age character and made them into mentor the next generation of character, which I thought was a really, really ass move for them to do, and it showed a great love of the history of DC and a passion in education in DC, you know, to the new readers that didn't know these. So
I agree, and just, you know, give some reverence and some deference to these characters, because they are older than most of us.
Very much so.
And have that Bill Finger.
They've been touched by
pedigree. Yeah, they've been touched by the great finger.
The great finger. They've been touched by the great finger. I like that. I unfortunately like that. So I think that does it for issue one of this story arc, Cole.
We're through it and better for it. Good Lord, what a series of revelations for us both, and you being forced to like something you. It's like that song about that man that the guy called up and then they became friends. I think it's so groovy now that you're getting together with that idea.
All right, why don't you plug us up? We're getting out of here because we got. Yeah. What is it? Wait.
We got four more issues and a lot more white boy music to get through.
I mean, wait till we hit our stride on Steely Dan. You guys are in real trouble then. So what issue? What are we are officially four issues away from 300 now.
Yes, indeed. It's getting frighteningly close.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready. I don't know if I'm prepared for what that is. What that means.
Well, and I think what's even more staggering is once we crest that hill.
Right.
You know, wow, 301 is going to be. And you know, we're standing at the precipice there and can look down on the, quite literally, I think we're plotted well into the next 100 issues.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
For sure. Easily. And I don't think we've committed to paper the story arc that I came up with the other week.
No, we haven't.
Which
and
I think is
I just added the 301st issue, bumping the original 301st issue, which was probably bumped in its own right at some point.
Well, I think we've become old geriatric podcaster because I'm pretty sure I've already pitched the same idea that I forgot that I pitched and came back up with and then pitched it again. Like, here's what we should do. That's yes. Yes. All right. So where can they find us? What can we do? Like,
yeah,
give me all
the
breakdown.
Finding us elsewhere. Look for us on the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. And also if you're kind of keen to, listen to everything, to the prior over 300 issues so far, counting annuals and specials and the like. Just go online and put in Hey Kids Comics back issue.
Okay.
Testing that as we speak here. And that's not even where I wanted to be. And I guess we probably should put in back issue bins. And you'll find Jedi Cole Universe Hey Kids Comic back issue bins on Blogspot. Check out, there are, we're about to open our seventh box of back issues, because box six is going to end at 300 plus all of the, additional stuff that's crammed in there. That one is just chock-a-block full of, it's got issues 251 through going on 300, Hey Kids Comics quarterlies 1 and 2, annual number 3, and Halloween special 2 and 3 in that one box alone.
It's a good box.
That is a very good box.
It's a solid box. Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah, look for us there and drop us a line sometime at jcumail@yahoo.com and let us know what you think, or if there's pressing questions. You know, one of these days we're going to do another Hey Kids Comics Presents, and we always need audience questions for those.
Yes, yes, and please, if you find any really good Yahoo answer on comic books, send them our way too. And if you email us, you can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, under at HK Comics. Interact with us there. We'll be happy to see you guys. Anybody who's not just Eddie Medina, we love you, Eddie. yeah. And Cole, what do you got going your Sundays, buddy?
Well, we are continuing to go strong over at Deep Ellum on Air. Sorry, good Lord, that's a deep cut. Over at Dallas on
it really
Air.
Is.
Yeah, that's where we got our start. We're over at Dallas on Air, myself and Eddie Medina, on the first and third Sundays of every month with the Rancor Pit Live. Just lots of simple tricks and nonsense with your favorite Star Wars guys. That is from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. DallasOnAir.com. You can check out the archives on the YouTube page, and we're also on the Rancor Pit Facebook page. We do Facebook live streaming while we're actually live streaming the show, and you can pick up the archive there as well of the more recent issues or episodes since we started doing that. And on the third Sundays of every month, my new show, Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, Isle of Toys, is on DallasOnAir.com as well. And that's from 9:30 to 10:30, preceding the last Rancor Pit of the month each month.
There you go.
It's been an amazing, all kinds of just crazy, amazing toys have been discussed with an incredible series of guests. And I'm really looking forward to 2019 with a whole bunch of new toys and concepts to be discussed. And we're going to close out the year with Christmas toys.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. I'm into that. You do the coolest stuff on there. Like, if you haven't, seriously, like, I'm not just plugging a friend's show and my co-host show, you know. If you haven't listened or watched or gone out and sook it out to see it, like, you should. They talk about the damn coolest stuff on there. It's really amazing.
And I'll just go ahead and tell you right now, we're going to rebel on our next, on the upcoming Ranker Pit Live. We're going to talk about all kinds of things about the Rebellion.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Is it time? It's time to rebel?
It's time to rebel, I think.
All right, well, next week, you guys, or depending on how this goes, we might just drop 2 1 week. The next issue, we go into the Silver Age of Hal Green Lantern and what that has to do with test pilots, Chuck Yeager, the space race, and movies. So a lot more interesting stuff coming up, weird, wild stuff on the next issue of Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Good night, everybody.